This is Health First with Kathy Hart, available across Canada through the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
Okay, here we go. We're going to have to do another replay. We didn't get the phone in. So this is Josephine Johnson on gene editing, and Alan Wishart was the host. Here we go.
Josephine Johnson is a director of research and a research scholar at the Hastings Center, which is an independent bioethics research institute. And she's also the co-author of Humans Flourishing in an Age of Gene Editing. She joins us now. Hello, Josephine.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Not a problem at all. Now, first question, because a lot of people might not know, what is bioethics?
Well, it's a field of study and work. It's not a discipline, but it's a field where a lot of people come from different disciplines to think together about ethical, legal, and social issues in science and medicine.
Okay. And now, which of those areas do you come at it from?
So my background is in law, and I also have a master's in bioethics, and I've worked on a bunch of issues related to stem cell research and genetics and reproductive ethics in psychiatry, but I have colleagues who work on issues around end-of-life care or sort of changing the natural environment, so a bunch of different kinds of questions, all generally in science and medicine.
So did you have the background in law before you got interested in bioethics, or did the two of them sort of go together?
Well, I was one of those people who was torn between law and medicine when I was a student, and I went down the law path, but I also always had in my law degree papers related to health and healthcare and medical issues, and so then I worked as a lawyer for a little while and was kind of a little unsatisfied. And then I thought maybe I'll specialize in an area of the law and healthcare and medicine that I'm passionate about. And then I kind of got drawn into bioethics along the way. So it was a little bit of a convoluted path.
So bioethics, obviously a fairly wide-ranging field. Is gene editing sort of one of the major parts of it right now?
I would say that it's one of the newest technologies that we are looking at in our field. And the reason I phrase it that way is because I think we actually are asking oftentimes the same kinds of questions. It's just that new technologies bring up those questions in a new way. So this is just like the newest technology where you have to ask these questions about, like, how does this technology change who we are? How does it impact families and individuals? What does it mean for society as a whole? So you can ask those questions about, you know, things like heart transplants or ventilators, but now we're asking those same kinds of questions about this brand new technology, gene editing.
Is this something within the bioethics field, is gene editing almost like a specialty of yours then?
I would say that ethical, legal, and social implications of genetics is a specialty area that I work in, and gene editing is just one tool. The other thing is I've also done a lot of work looking at assisted reproductive technologies, and of course there are uses of gene editing that are essentially a kind of assisted reproduction, and so there's a little bit of an overlap.
And again, you defined sort of bioethics earlier. What is gene editing? People probably have an idea just from the name, but is there a more technical description of gene editing?
So there's a brand new, well, pretty much, it's not brand new now, but like a sort of a 5 or 6 year old tool called CRISPR that lots of people have probably also heard of. And that actually just stands for a very scientific long term clustered really interspersed palindromic repeats, that people call it
okay.
CRISPR, and it's an adaptation of a bacterial immune system. And what scientists worked out is they could take this aspect of a bacteria's immune system and actually use it to cut and paste and change DNA in any organism or in any cell or in a dish. So it's like this sort of almost obscure part of science, sort of bacteria and how they respond to viruses, their immune response, that got that was able to be pulled out of context and used as a way of cutting and editing any kind of DNA, and that includes human DNA, but it also includes mosquito DNA or the DNA in plants. So it's like a really versatile tool that you can use in all kinds of DNA.
And I suppose that is one of the things where the bioethics comes into it, is this a tool where it's okay to maybe use it on, let's say, mosquitoes, so that they don't carry some of the more malignant diseases they do, but is it something we should be doing to humans?
Right. So people are looking at all of the different possible applications and asking those kinds of questions, and actually finding that the answer is, you know, the bad news is the answer is actually kind of complicated in every different context, because there are some kinds of changes we might want to make to mosquitoes that could be very beneficial for human health but might actually be bad for the environment. So it's very tricky trying to figure out, like, what are the changes we could make and what would they actually do and how would that interact with different systems. And so everything needs a really careful look.
So I guess that raises the question, do we know enough about the genes that we are looking at editing that we can have any sort of confidence that what we're doing is going to be for the benefit of humanity?
Well, sometimes we do, and sometimes we don't. And that's, so, again, sorry to give these kinds of answers, but this is a really tricky issue. So there are some human trials of gene editing interventions in people who have very serious genetic disorders, which are killing them, where we understand the genes pretty well that would be trying to change. And there's a lot at stake, right, where the people are really suffering. And so if there could be any kind of breakthrough for them, it would be a very positive thing. And so those kinds of studies are already starting to happen, just like we look at very serious diseases and new kinds of drugs, right? They're a similar kind of study. It's just that it's at the level of the gene. But a lot of oversight of that. That's very different from saying, oh, let's change the genes in embryos so that they are resistant to HIV, we think, and see how that goes, which is the experiment that was conducted last year in China that we all heard about right around this time last year, where twin babies were born and their genes had been manipulated when they were single-cell embryos to try to confer resistance to HIV. Where we're just not actually sure exactly how that's going to go, and then it's not clear that we understand the gene that was manipulated well enough to have actually done that study. So there's a lot of just really big differences. Some studies are backed up by a lot of good background research, and others are a bit more of a leap.
So looking at that, what you were just talking about with the twins in China, where they tried to make them basically resistant to HIV, how do you go about testing that theory? Like, do you inject them with HIV virus at some point and see whether they resist it?
Well, so hopefully we would all sort of guess that that would be a really unethical thing to do to two people who never had any say in whether or not they were in a study in the first place. So one of the big questions, and why there needs to be, I think, a lot of attention paid to this area of editing embryos before we do it, is that we actually don't know yet or have agreement about how to ethically set up those studies. So how do you set up a study to enroll people who don't exist yet? Most of us get a say in whether or not we're in a research study, so that's already one issue. And then, like you were saying, how would you test whether or not somebody was HIV resistant in a way that was ethical? So all of those kinds of questions have to be answered in advance for every study you might want to do. And when you've got a sick person who's dying of a genetic condition, it's tricky, but you can answer those questions. But when you've got two embryos that don't even exist yet, that aren't yet people, who could be born without this being, you know, in a study where we're manipulating their genes, you know, it's even hard to know how, whether or not it's ethical to do the study in the first place. So questions that people are debating at the international stage right now. And then this person who just let the head in the research in China is sort of being held up as an example of someone who really jumped the gun. Mm-hmm.
And I would think one of the other problems there is, even if it turns out that what they did was successful and these people are now immune, these two are now immune to HIV, at some point, you know, say 20, 30 years down the road, it turns out that they're more susceptible to another disease. What happens then?
That's right. So, like, people have actually been discussing this, which is that it seems that having this particular kind of genetic change that was given to these, or tried to be given to these now twin girls, that actually there are downsides to that. So the upside might make you more resistant to HIV, but downsides meaning that you'd be more susceptible to other kinds of infections. And so you'd want to have a really good debate, right, first about whether or not the downsides are worth the upsides, and that just was bypassed in this case. So, do we know enough about this change to really know confidently that the upsides outweigh the downsides? And I think all of those are open questions in that particular case. So, really saying that we have to be super careful, that we really look under every stone before we take some of these steps.
So now I'm thinking one of the problems is, again, with the doctor who's interested in doing it, they don't maybe want to listen to a debate for the next 5 years on the ethics of it one way or the other. They'd like to get in and start doing their work. Is that something that comes up as well?
Yeah, so I think that issue comes up in a couple of different ways. One of them is where people are motivated by genuine, you know, there's suffering that they really want to address. And so that can understandably make people impatient about dealing with ethical and legal questions before they proceed. I still think you actually have to deal with those things because they will come back to bite you one way or the other. But I can understand when you have patients who are dying and you really feel a need to address their suffering. But there is another kind of impulse to move quickly, which is just about trying to be first. Mm-hmm. And so there I have a little less sympathy with that. You know, we all understand that we all feel competition in certain ways, but that's really absolutely no reason to shortcut ethical and legal oversight. So sometimes it takes a while for something to be worked through the ethics and law, but at the end of the day, that's going to benefit everybody. So jumping the gun is really, you know, unwise. And you see actually that this researcher in China is now being kind of shunned internationally and like punished for proceeding. So there's definitely, you know, he's experiencing downsides himself. But my understanding is that, you know, certainly wanting to be have a world first was definitely part of his desire. He has some videos on YouTube that he made, and where he was hoping to announce this whole thing via a series of YouTube videos, but he got scooped by a reporter, altered the storyline for him. But he has these videos, and you can watch them, and you can see him explaining why he wanted to do this experiment. And it's possible that he really was motivated by a genuine desire to help people avoid HIV infection, and he talks about how stigmatized that condition is in China. So I'm not entirely sure that his motivations were all, you know, selfish, but one of the reasons it's good to open up your study and get input on the ethics of it is that you're just one person, right, and your perspective is just one perspective. So one of the things that he kind of didn't do was like seek a whole lot of international or even national input into what he was doing, where people could raise these questions about whether or not he was being premature and had he really checked out all the different avenues, et cetera, et cetera. So, I do think there are at least two different things motivating people to want to move quickly, and some of those things are just raw ambition, and sometimes it's also, you know, wanting to address really significant suffering.
Okay, Josephine, we got to go to a break. When we come back, we'll talk some more about gene editing and the ethics of it.